On February 2nd, the National Broadcasting Company presented an outstanding radio drama in its regular Dragnet series. Because it carries a message of vital importance to every parent, the story of Claude Jimerson, child killer, serves an additional purpose, however. It is a thought-provoking climax to WWJ's presentation of the series Protect Your Child, which has featured Fran Harris as moderator and has presented some of the nation's most prominent psychiatrists, social workers, and law enforcement agents in serious discussions concerned with the general problem of sex deviation. And at the close of tonight's transcribed program, the governor of Michigan, G. Menin Williams, will relate the progress made by his study commission on sex deviance. But now, Dragnet.
Ladies and gentlemen, this program is for you, not your children. The subject is of vital importance to you as parents. This is the story of a vicious man.
The story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to homicide detail. Two small girls are reported missing. Somewhere between their homes and a neighborhood grocery store, they dropped from sight. Your job, find them.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Monday, October 27th. It was cloudy in Los Angeles. We're working a night watch out of homicide detail. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Thad Brown, chief detective. My name's Friday. We were on the way out from Central Division. It was 16 minutes past 8 p.m. when we got to South Peoria Street. Number 267.
Sure gloomy, huh?
Yeah, it's sultry.
Looks like we're in for some rain.
Yes, sir?
Police officers. Is Lieutenant Barker here?
Yes, you want to come in?
Thank you. This is Sergeant Romero. I'm Sergeant Friday, Central Homicide.
How are you? My name's Claude Jimerson. Lieutenant Barker's in here, on the phone now.
Hi, Captain.
Yeah.
I'll listen. Hey, Romero. Friday.
How's it going, Lieutenant?
That's good. You met Mr. Jimerson?
Oh, sure. Sit down, gentlemen. Would you like some coffee? I can have the wife make some.
No, thank you.
We didn't want to bother the girl's parents any more than we had to. Jimerson here is one of the neighbors. He's been nice enough to let us use his phone.
The kids disappeared about 4 this afternoon, is that right?
At 3:45. Got out a local broadcast on him. Here's a missing report.
Thank you, John. Thelma Griswold, age 11. Barbara Sperry, 7-year-old. You talked to both families.
Yeah. At 3:30 this afternoon, Mrs. Griswold sent her daughter to the grocery store down on Sycamore Avenue. It's about 10 blocks from their home. The Sperry girl, a friend of hers, she went with her.
Anybody at the store remember seeing them?
According to the grocery clerk, they were there about 3:45. Mother gave the kids a note. She bought a loaf of white bread, a half pound of bacon, a dozen onions.
Yeah.
That's right, Sergeant. I hope nothing's happened to the kids. We've been neighbors to the Griswolds for years. Sperry's, too.
Did you notice if the little girls were going in the direction of their home?
Yes, they were. The last time I saw them, they were about a block away, heading straight for home. Little Sperry girl had a dog with her, Champ, I think they call him. He's a collie.
And he's missing, too.
That's right, Joe. Not a trace of the kids or the dog. Juvenile officers from 77th Street have been checking the neighborhood for the past 3 hours.
Are the girls in the habit of wandering off like this?
Parents say no. It's the first time.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks very much, Mr. Jimerson.
Well, not at all, Sergeant. Sure you won't have a cup of coffee?
No, thanks. We don't like to bother you, but we may have to check back with you later tonight. Routine questions.
If I can help out in any way to find those girls, let me know.
Yeah, we'll let you know, Jimerson. Thanks again.
Nice fellow.
Yeah, most of the neighbors we've talked to have been the same, anxious to help. Some of them are out with our juvenile officers now trying to dig up a lead on the kids.
You check the movie theater and the playgrounds in the neighborhood.
Everything, Joe.
Those some of your men from juvenile, Lieutenant?
Yeah, looks like it. Yeah, Schwartz and Preston.
Lieutenant?
Yeah, Preston, what you got?
Found the kid's dog, Tully.
Where?
Just above Sanchez Drive up in the hills. Hope it's no indication.
How do you mean?
Dog's dead.
Collie dog was taken to a veterinarian on Jefferson Boulevard to be examined for cause of death. But put in a call to the office, and a special detail of men was assigned to aid in searching the area where the dog was discovered. We got out an all-points bulletin. The fathers of the missing girls and a dozen neighbors joined in the search. With the aid of flashlights, we started from the end of Sanchez Drive, and as best we could, we covered the ground for almost a full mile back into the Sunset Hills. 10:55 p.m. started to thunder. The search went on. The hilly terrain and thick patches of scrub oak didn't make the job any easier. 11:15 p.m. started to rain.
Watch your step, Joe. The rocks are slippery.
Yeah. I can't figure it. Not a sign.
What do you think?
I don't know. Wait a minute. Flash your light over here. No, here.
See something?
I thought I did. Yeah. Scrap of brown paper.
Who's this come?
Sergeant. Is that you?
Oh, Jimerson? Yeah. What's that you got?
I found it. Right down there. Just off the path.
Paper sack.
Look.
Loaf of bread. A few oranges. A package of bacon.
Where'd you find it?
Right down there. Mr. Holmquist and me. We were heading back for the cars when I saw this bag lying to one side of the bush.
We'll take it, Jimerson. Thanks. Let's go, Ben.
That means that Barbara and Tom were up here today.
You haven't mentioned that to either one of the girls' fathers.
No, I haven't.
Good. They're having a hard enough time as it is.
Riney? Ben? See him for a minute?
Yeah. Excuse us, Mr. Jimerson.
Certainly.
Yeah?
Schwartz and I checked with the vet who examined the dog.
What'd he say?
Says the dog was beaten to death.
We made another attempt to continue the search of the Sunset Hills area for the two missing girls, but the heavy rain and the darkness made the job impossible. The rain had also destroyed the physical evidence at the spot where we had found the grocery bag. We went back to Jimerson's house and called the office again. Another detail of men was assigned to be on hand to help in the search when it resumed at daylight. Chief of Detectives Thad Brown and Captain Harry Elliott of Homicide were notified of late developments. At 25 minutes past midnight, we started to retrace the steps of the two missing girls from the time they left their homes at 3:30 the afternoon before. We covered every foot of ground along the route which the girls reportedly took on their way to the grocery store. We got the grocery clerk out of bed and interviewed him again. We talked with two elderly ladies in the neighborhood who said that they had seen the missing children between 3 and 4 p.m. the previous afternoon. They could add nothing to what Jimerson had already told us. 3:30 a.m. It was still raining hard. We drove back to South Peoria Street and sat in the car. The lights were still burning in the homes of the missing youngsters, the Griswolds and the Sperrys. Jimerson asked us in for coffee again. This time we accepted. We went in and sat around the kitchen table. Glenn Chandler and Stendahl from Homicide, Lieutenant Barker, Ben and myself. Jimerson's wife made the coffee. There wasn't much talking.
You want more coffee?
Hmm? Oh, yeah. Thank you, Miss Jimerson. Thank you.
You want some more?
No, thanks. It's fine.
You want some more coffee?
Is that not that?
Sure, Lieutenant. Plenty. Go ahead.
Thanks.
Fill the sugar bowl, will you, Amy? Empty.
There isn't any more. You never do things right. I told you to get some at the store today.
You told me?
Yeah, that's all right, Jimerson. Never use it anyway. Thanks.
Never do anything right.
All right, Amy, go to bed. She's a little upset. Not feeling too well.
Well, I guess we better be going, Jimerson. Thanks.
No, that's all right, Sergeant. She didn't mean you. It's this whole thing, I guess. Got everybody on edge. There's still a chance they may be all right.
How do we explain the bag of groceries we found back in the hills? The dog.
If anybody's hurt those kids, we'll take care of him right here in this neighborhood. He'll get what's coming to him.
Somebody at your back door?
Oh, yes, Albert.
Sergeant
Friday
here?
Yes, he's here. Come on in.
Sergeant.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
What do you got?
Mr. Griswold, Joe. Says he'd like to have you come over and talk to him. Figures he'll make his wife feel better, all broken up.
Sure. Come on, Ben. We'll be over at the Griswolds, Lieutenant.
Thank you for the coffee, Jim. Not at all. If you get a chance, tell Griswold how sorry everybody is. We'll help all we can.
Sure.
Bad night.
Yeah. Did you check by the Sperry's house, Tom?
Mm-hmm. Mother's trying to get a little sleep. Father's still sitting up. There he is, by the window.
Yeah.
This is the Griswold home.
Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah. They're going to ask questions. What are we going to tell them?
I don't know.
They could be all right. Kids do funny things sometimes.
Maybe, but they don't murder their pet dog. Like a doctor, a lawyer, or an engineer, the police officer comes to realize that there's only so much that can be learned from his books. Time and experience make up the rest. The police manual contains no stock answers for the grieving wife who has just lost a husband in an auto accident. No firm but polite reply to the belligerent motorist handed a traffic tag. No words of reassurance for distraught parents of missing girls, ages 11 and 7. Whether it's trapping criminals or comforting parents, you find the right answer the hard way. There isn't any other way. We sat and talked with the Griswolds for a full hour. We didn't tell them about the dog or the bag of groceries. Until the fate of the two little girls was definitely decided, we figured giving them the information would serve no purpose except to add to their worries. 5 minutes past 5 a.m., almost a full hour until daylight. It was still raining.
George, maybe the officers would like some breakfast before they leave.
No, thank you kindly, Miss Griswold. We had some sandwiches about an hour ago.
Sure, I can't fix you something. No trouble.
No, sir, thanks anyway.
Terrible night. Rain.
Now, Helen, just a little while longer. We'll find the girls. It'll be daylight soon.
Ms. Griswold, some of your neighbors tell us that there were two strangers here in the neighborhood this afternoon.
Yes, but that was earlier. Mrs. Nelson next door and I were talking about it. One was a gardener looking for work. The other one was selling books.
What time were they around, ma'am?
Book sales on the field about noon. The gardener about 2 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. How is your daughter about strangers? Does she make friends easily?
No, not at all. Selma's very careful about that. She'd never go with a stranger, I'm sure.
Why do you ask that question, Sergeant? Have you found out something?
No, sir. No, we haven't. It's just a routine check, that's all.
I can't understand it. The girls. Out in all this rain, something must have happened. I know.
Now, Helen, you've been doing fine. Don't let down now.
Joe. Miss Brown's car just pulled up outside.
Thanks, Ben.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Mr. Griswold. Ms. Griswold.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. Here, let me show you the door.
We'll meet at the end of Sanchez Drive, Mr. Griswold, about 6 a.m. Should be light enough by then.
All right. Oh, Sergeant, there is a chance, isn't there? The girls are all right.
There's a good chance. You try not to worry. Come on, Ben. Freshen. Tom, you want to check with Barker again and see if any of his men have a line on the two men here in the neighborhood yet?
Right.
If you want us, we'll be in Thad Brown's car.
Right, Sergeant.
What time you got, Joe?
20 to 6. It's getting light now.
Yeah. Let's get out of this rain.
Gentlemen, you look a little wet.
I could stand a dry pair of shoes.
Still no trace of the kids?
You heard about the dog and the bag of groceries.
Yeah. Nothing else since then?
No. It'll be light in a couple of minutes, and we can start searching the hills again.
I ordered up another detail of men to help. They're parked up on Sanchez Drive. Captain Elliott's with them.
Good. We can use all the help we can get. That's rough terrain. There's a lot of ground to cover up there.
Yes, you talked to everybody in the neighborhood.
Yeah, parents, too.
They help you much?
Well, they told us there were two strangers in the neighborhood before the girls disappeared. We're having them checked out.
Yeah.
Griswold thinks the kids would be safe on that count. Says his daughter's afraid of strangers, never goes near them.
Mm-hmm. How much area did you cover in the hills last night?
About a full mile, would you say, Ben? Mm-hmm. Starting from Sanchez Drive straight back into the brush.
It wasn't too thorough. Not enough men, not enough light.
Well, you got plenty of both right now.
10 minutes past 6 a.m., Tuesday, October 28th. The search of the Sunset Hills area was resumed. 150 officers spread out over a 2-square-mile area with orders to probe every foot of ground. With them were almost 50 volunteers from the neighborhood. The rain settled to a cold, steady downpour. The mud was ankle-deep. 8:30 a.m., no sign of the missing youngsters. 10:30, still no sign. The search went on. A neighborhood restaurant owner sent out 5-gallon jugs of hot coffee for members of the searching party. After 6 continuous hours combing the hill, still no results. Chief Brown, Ben, and I went to the car for a cup of coffee and a cigarette.
Got me beat. Those kids wanted off. They had to come in this direction.
Well, they couldn't have headed toward town. Somebody would have noticed them, sure.
Yeah. No leads at all on that APB you sent out?
2. They both fizzled.
The youngsters up in those hills someplace. Gotta be. Are you two ready?
Yeah. Let's go.
Sure sure doesn't figure. 2 square miles. We've been over it twice.
And go over it again. Find them.
Thelma Griswold, age 11. Barbara Sperry, age 7. Tuesday, October 28th, 2 p.m. They were still missing. Another detail of men from Metropolitan Division were dispatched to aid in the hunt. The daily newspapers played the story across the front page. Wire services bulletined the news across the country. Radio newscasters covered the story at the scene. On South Peoria Street, the two mothers sat in their homes and waited. The search went on. It stopped ringing.
Did you cover that patch of underbrush over there, Joe?
Yeah. Watch it.
Yeah. Darn.
Oh, yeah. Let's swing up this way.
All right.
Anything?
No, nothing.
All right, come on. Almost 2:30.
Yeah, too much coffee, sour stomach.
Me too. You got a cigarette, I'm out.
Oh, here.
Thanks.
Riley! Romero! Come on down!
Preston, what do you got? What is it?
Watch it, Ben. Bad spot here.
Yeah, it's slippery.
Thelma Griswold had brown hair and brown eyes, about 4 feet 6 inches tall. She had a bunch of wildflowers in her hands. Barbara Sperry had blonde hair and blue eyes. She held a bunch of wildflowers, too.
Friday?
Chief? Who found them?
Jemerson, some of the neighbors.
Well,
you're good.
Preston.
Yes, sir?
Get something and cover them up.
Yes, sir.
Come on.
Yeah.
I've been a cop 32 years and never seen anything like that. I hope I never do again.
Must have been a maniac. Had to be.
The lowest kind, depraved.
Anybody call the crime lab?
Yeah, the area's been cleared.
Family's been notified?
Not yet. I'll have to tell them. You want to come along?
No. That wouldn't be any good.
2 lives. What can you say?
Whoever did it ran up a big bill.
They're going to pay it.
Bodies were discovered. The hunt for the psychopathic killer was underway. Lee Jones and his crew from the crime lab arrived and took pictures of everything that could possibly have a bearing on the crime. Physical evidence was hard to find. The heavy rain had destroyed any possible chance there might have been of finding footprints. When the crew from the crime lab was finished, the coroner arrived and took the bodies to the county morgue for autopsy. An immediate roundup of all known sexual psychopaths in the area was ordered. They were taken into homicide for questioning. So were the people from the South Peoria Street neighborhood whom we had talked with previously. The questioning went on all through the night. Together with a half a dozen officers from homicide detail, we narrowed down the field. Wednesday, October 29th, 7 a.m., we checked in with Chief of Detectives Thad Brown.
Gentlemen, you must be sorry.
Got a few hours sleep last night. Could use a few more.
Sorry, we have to keep moving on this.
You see the papers this morning?
Yeah, they're like everybody else, crying too late. Someday people are going to learn you don't fool with these degenerates. You take precautions or you get the consequences. There's no in-between.
The usual talk going around town. Supposed to be all our fault, letting the psychos run loose.
No, we don't make the laws, we enforce them. So we got something to work with. Laws with teeth in them, these atrocities are going
to
go on.
Nobody seems to care. We pick them up, they serve a few days, pay a fine, and they waltz out of here. Nobody cares.
You sure pity them, don't cure them. Nature played a trick on them. Feel sorry for them until they kill a kid. Not a firm law to cover them as they are. We have to wait till they murder somebody.
We've got a better law for mad dogs. We don't let them run loose till they bite somebody.
Those two little girls ought to prove something. How's the parents making out?
What you might expect. Shot, hysteria. Excuse me.
Brown speaking.
Who?
Send him in.
Chandler. They finished questioning that bunch we brought in yesterday.
Oh, Chief. Ben, Joe.
How many possibles, Glenn?
None. 4 we had left established airtight alibis. We checked the registrations, gave them their releases.
Where does that leave us?
Start from scratch.
I don't think so, Chief.
You got a hunch?
A little better than that, Joe. I'm sold.
What do you mean?
You said the parents told you the little girls were afraid of strangers, wouldn't go near them.
That's right.
We got the same reactions from some of the neighbors we talked to day before yesterday.
Yeah.
Now we find out that all the known psychos in the area are clear, perfect alibis.
Well, you figure the killer couldn't have been a stranger to the little girls.
That's right. There were only two strangers in the whole neighborhood the day the girls disappeared, the gardener and the salesman. And both of them have been checked and cleared.
Mm-hmm.
As far as we know, the little girls wouldn't have gone that far up in the hills alone of their own accord, and they wouldn't have gone with a stranger. They had to be lured there and by someone they knew.
Any ideas?
Could have been one of the neighbors.
No, we checked every possible out there, Glenn. We questioned them a half a dozen times.
So have I. There's one that might fit.
Who's that?
Claude Jimerson.
Glenn Chandler had been a veteran homicide officer before Ben or I joined the department. He was tall, quiet, and reserved. He had a good reason for everything he did, for everything he thought. The three of us sat down and tried to put the pieces together. Number one, Chandler uncovered a point that Ben and I had missed completely. Jimerson and his wife were not close friends of either the Sperry family or the Griswolds. For a near stranger, he showed an extraordinary interest in the welfare of the children after they disappeared. Number two, Ben and I discovered that Jimerson's wife had an 8-year-old boy by a previous marriage. The child did not live with them. Mrs. Jimerson told Chandler that her husband had been cruel to the boy. She refused to elaborate. Number three, Jimerson was the last person to see the children alive. Number four, the bodies of the children had been well hidden in the underbrush. Jimerson found them. Number five, Jimerson had bent over backwards to make friends with the investigating officers right from the start. As any veteran officer can tell you, that's not the usual attitude. At 8:30 a.m., Chandler, Ben, and I left the office. We spent the day digging back 15 years into Jimerson's life. We got back to the office just after midnight. Thursday, October 30th, 10 a.m., we checked in.
Okay, Joe, all ready.
Thanks. Come on, Ben.
Yeah.
Morning, Mr. Jimerson.
Oh. How are you, Sergeant? Glad to see you.
Sit down. Sorry to bother you again.
Not at all. Glad to help. Anything new turn up?
Did you kill those two little girls?
That's a funny thing to ask. Of course not. You know that.
We ask everybody the same thing. Hope you're not offended.
Oh, you kind of surprised me. I didn't know.
Did you kill those little girls?
I don't understand. I told you no. Of course not.
It's a stock question. Routine. Did you kill them?
Now look, Sergeant. How many times do I have to tell you no?
Sorry. You don't have any children, do you?
No, we don't.
No stepchildren?
No. Why?
Before you moved out to South Peoria Street, you and the wife lived out in West L.A., didn't you? Kelton Avenue?
Well, yes. How'd you know?
You recall a Mary Gibbs out there?
Gibbs? No.
6-year-old girl. You were charged with molesting her. That was back in 1944.
They were crazy. They never proved it.
Before Kelton Avenue, you lived in Santa Monica on 10th Street. Is that right?
Yes.
It was an 8-year-old girl. Donna Honrath?
That kid lied, too. She asked me to fix her doll buggy. I never went near her.
What about your stepson? Why isn't he living with you? Why did your wife send him to live with her sister?
Amy's crazy. I never harmed the boy. We didn't get along, that's all. It got on my nerves.
You've had 4 jobs in the past 5 years. What were they?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You were a janitor at a grammar school down the south end of town, then a gardener at a children's playground. Then you were a shoe salesman, children's shoes. Then you worked at another grammar school.
What does all this mean, anyway? What are you getting at?
Have you ever been in jail?
Once. 6 months, there was some trouble.
What kind of trouble?
I didn't know what I was doing. I was drinking. I didn't mean to bother the kid. Well?
That's all, Jimerson. Routine question. You can go now.
Oh, thanks. I hope you haven't got the wrong idea about me. I like children, that's all.
Sure. Thanks for coming in.
Not at all, Sergeant. Anything I can do to help? Well, goodbye.
Say, Jimerson, I almost forgot. There is one thing.
Oh?
Since you're the one who found the little girls, we'll have to have you identify the bodies.
It won't take long. Morgue's just across the street, up the bluff.
Well, I'd like to help you, but I got an appointment.
All you have to do is look at them. It won't take you long. Come on, let's go.
I'd like to help, Sergeant, but I don't take these things well. I get sick.
We'll make it fast. Not this way.
Raining again.
I'm sorry, Sergeant. I don't think I better go.
Just identify them, that's all. It won't take a minute.
Maybe if we had a drink before we went in.
You can have one after.
And watch it. There's heavy traffic.
Yeah, lights dim. We'll have to wait. I need a drink. I can't go in that place without a drink.
You'll be all right. Okay, let's go. Morgue's up this way.
I can't look at him. I get sick. Don't make me.
Nothing to it. You'll see.
Here we are. We went down the driveway. It's a shortcut.
This way.
Hi, Joe. Can I help you?
Yeah, Archie. Those little girls. Thelma Griswold. Barbara Sperry.
Oh, yeah. This way.
Please.
Right here, Joe. Yeah, Thelma Griswold.
Uncover.
My fault. I like kids. I didn't understand.
Neither do I, mister. Come on.
The story you have just heard was true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
On March 18th, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 87, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial. And convicted of murder in the first degree. On April 23rd at 10 a.m., he was executed in the lethal gas chamber at the state penitentiary. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice for Dragnet comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.A. Wharton. You're tuned for the stars on NBC.
Ladies and gentlemen, we now present the Governor of Michigan, G. Menon Williams.
Thank you, Fran Harris. The problem of the sex deviate is not a new one, but it has only been recently brought into sharp focus during the last few months by a series of terrible crimes. The discussion which resulted from these crimes has uncovered a double problem. First, the people must be made aware of the ever-present danger of the sex deviate turned criminal. And secondly, we must work out some methods of finding these unbalanced persons and treating them before they commit crimes. The newspapers and the radio, including WWJ and the Detroit News, have taken the initiative on the first problem. Through the excellent series by Alan Schoenfield and other printed articles, the news has helped a great deal to make the public aware of the danger from this type of unbalanced person. Also, out of the public need for information came that excellent radio series, Protect Your Child, an open forum discussion moderated by Fran Harris of WWJ emphasized more clearly the need for parents to inform their children. As you know, I have recently established the Governor's Commission on Sex Deviate, headed by Father Ralph Richards of Saginaw. This commission will deal with both phases of the problem. It includes outstanding psychiatrists, psychologists, social workers, religious leaders, and other qualified citizens. The sex deviate problem is really only one phase of the larger problem of mental illness and the treatment thereof. The Sex Deviate Commission is making a general and thorough study of the problem. It is to make recommendations not only on the phase of public information and education, but also on legislation that may be needed to protect the people against this ever-present danger. Again, I want to take a moment to thank the Detroit News, along with its affiliate radio stations, WWJ, AM, and FM, for the part they have played in creating an informed public opinion on this question.
Thank you very much, Governor Williams. Now that this series of programs has done so much to stimulate public interest in the problem which faces every parent, that of the sex deviant, WWJ invites you to listen to a new roundtable series called Family Living. which starts next week Friday at 10:45 in the evening. It will deal with family interests in children, teenage disputes, family arguments, money matters, division of housework, reasons for divorce, home discipline, living with the in-laws, all kind of personality problems, the 101 things that enter into family living.
You have just heard the governor of the state of Michigan, G. Menin Williams, reporting on the progress made by his study commission on sex deviance. Governor Williams was introduced by Fran Harris, who served as moderator on a series of forum discussion programs over WWJ, treating the general subject of sex deviation and called Protect Your Child. Also heard on tonight's transcribed program was a rebroadcast of one of the year's outstanding radio dramas, The Story of Claude Jimerson, Child Killer, answering many requests because of its important message to every parent. WWJ, the Detroit News, wishes to thank the National Broadcasting Company, the team of cigarettes, sponsors of the Dragnet series, the American Federation of Musicians, and the American Federation of Radio Artists for their kind cooperation in permitting the use of Dragnet. Dragnet, based on true stories from the files of the Los Angeles Police Department, is heard regularly over this station at 10:30 Thursday evening. This program has been brought to you in the public interest by WWJ AM and FM, the Detroit News.